the apprenticeship is, if it's not dead, it's panting heavily in the corner.
You know, there's not much choice for individuals, and what, you're going to tell a 30-year-old bloke to go and be an apprentice? No.
You can always make someone a great barber. You can't make them a great person. So if they got the attitude, they turn up on time, they look dapper, you know what? We can make that skill set a lot better.
It's now just a question of affordability. And the fact that we don't get any help with it.
And you're not getting that support from college. You do have to do all the training yourself. Yeah. If you're training, you're moving yourself away from your chair.
Unless you're a business owner that looks further down the line and understands what your growth of your business is, the investment of an apprentice is almost doesn't seem viable.
Hi, welcome to the Noble Barber Podcast. I'm Anthony Laband, and we'll be talking to various people in the industry who've made it and their journey and how they got here. Talking honest, cutting through the crap, and making sure your story and their story is heard to help your business and hopefully mine. If you haven't already, please hit the subscribe button, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
The apprenticeship is, if it's not dead, it's panting heavily in the corner. The industry is starting to change. And I think, you know, you caught quite a lot of flack from the industry initially with your novice to master barber logo.
Yeah.
Which I think probably now is a bit more understood, I guess.
Yeah, sure. Considering that the apprentice route is a little bit harder to go down, you know, there's not much choice for individuals. And, you know, what, you're going to tell a 30-year-old bloke to go and be an apprentice? No, they want to, you know, find a way that quicken the industry.
And that's the bit I discovered last time chatting to you. It does tend to be second careers here. Do you?
Yeah.
You don't have any. Do you have many youngsters?
We do get a few 16 to 18 year olds, but we do get a lot more people between their 20s and 30s around that time. Yes, they're coming in their second, third professions. You know, they come from all walks of life, you know, police officers.
But you must see such a change in the industry. I mean, in your business over 15 years. I mean, barbering in general 15 years ago was a different battlefield.
Yeah, sure. I think I'm not, without giving too much detail, it's the type of people that want to become barbers is what I notice, which is different. Yeah. It feels like people are coming to me just because they've got nothing. They're not pursuing another career. And sometimes you feel like, do you really want to do this? Or are you just doing this just because, you're at a dead end of what you want to do?
Yeah.
So for me, the way it's changed for me is that I get individuals that come here and they don't fully, you know, immerse themselves in what they have to do to become barbers. So for me, it's a bit more of a struggle to get them job ready.
Yeah, it's that fire in the belly, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, I was just chatting to one of your guys downstairs earlier. And, you know, when I started, I joined with you know, another dozen odd people that all started around the same time. And one by one, people fell off, you know, their apprentices. I think everyone doesn't always make it through a fully fledged old style apprenticeship anyway. And you certainly don't always get a superstar out of every training course.
No, I guess for anyone going into an apprenticeship, you've got to really see it for the long term. You know, you've got to commit to it, and you know that it's going to be tough to get there. You've got to be disciplined. You've got to be passionate.
Getting the fire in the belly. I think. Yeah. I mean, it must be nice when you do meet those students that you know are breathing it and living it and really want it.
Yeah, absolutely. Those are the best students to teach, actually. Yeah. But yeah, you get all sorts here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you created some quite good names. I was chatting with Dan Burnett quite recently. He started off here. And again, that was a big second career for him.
It's so great to see him doing really well. Yeah.
And he's bought his, you know, he went from novice to barbershop owner in about 18 months.
Yeah,
didn't he?
Well, we've started a lot of careers for a lot of people. Mm. You know, made people their own bosses. You know, being able to get giving people a lot of opportunities to, you know, open up their own barbershops. And Dan's just one great example.
But how do you feel the industry's looking now compared to 15 years ago? Do you think we're in better shape or worse?
Well, from a cutting ability, I think we're in a better place. People know how to fade really well. People are picking up the scissors really well. They're learning different layering techniques. However, I feel that, you know, the industry has changed in terms of that, like, people, there's less humility. There's people are not as humble as they used to be. You know, there's just a few egotistical barbers out there that just think they are changing the world, but really they're just there they're cutting hair and to service their clients. And that's what I feel like people are missing at the moment.
Talking about standards and talking about education is something obviously that is close to all of our hearts. You know, it's something that we really, really are passionate about. And I've said for many, many years, being a barber educator or being a barber trainer or whatever you want to call it is possibly one of the biggest privileges we could have. You know, coming from barbering backgrounds or coming from a hairdressing background into barbering, it's a massive privilege. But I think the responsibility is always bigger than the privilege. I think literally there's too many for me barber trainers out there at the moment teaching people dumb shit. The responsibility is to give them a start to the future, start to the career that can make a massive difference in their life. I think you're only as good as you're taught sometimes. I know there's a lot of developing they've got to do without that, but it really bugs me at the moment.
But until we get some sort of regulation, some sort of proper standard, our industry stands up and says, we want to be legislated. We want to be seen as a craft. So, you know, like a kind of corgi gas fare.
Is it going to happen?
I mean, I guess you can get good and bad plumbers and good and bad mechanics, but essentially you still have to be able to do that
job. But it's like, what are you going to license and what are you going to regulate? If you look at the American standard, it's literally just, you know, airborne diseases and blood diseases and things like that. It's just keeping people safe. It's got nothing to do with work ethic or standard. You can be rubbish because the market then will not come to you.
Even as a store owner, if you're setting up stores, do you think there's a difference between?
I'm going to be on my best behaviour and not interrupt. I think if you're a store owner, I think the standard lies with you. As a store owner, your responsibility to get people in. You know, listen, I've had many people come to me who want great barbers, but you can always make someone a great barber. You can't make them a great person. So if they've got the attitude, they turn up on time, they look dapper, you know what? We can make that skill set a lot, lot better. So as a store owner, I think it's easier because you are setting the standard, aren't you? You're absolutely setting the standard and they've got to rise to it. You don't bring it down to them. Sorry, Luke.
No. It's a good point.
But do you all find that you've got students, not wishing to make this all education, but do you find that you've got students that you kind of meet almost day one? You're like, oh, yeah, you got something. And then by day 30, you're still in the game. And equally, the other side that you meet ones and you're like, you're only here because you've got nothing. You've got no other idea.
It's the thing, going back to the first point, it's like, you know, Michael probably sees it all the time that people come through his academy. Is this, can we agree that this job isn't for everybody? We make it for everybody.
Yeah.
That's almost the problem. It's not, because you probably find out of an academy course, one.
I don't have that many issues. I do get the odd 16 to 18-year-old that's had their course paid by their parents or someone else, that their heart's not in it. But anyone that's paid for it themselves, they're there, they're dedicated, they want to do really well. So I don't have much of a problem having to, you know, get people alert and focused to come out the course with flying colours. They're paying a lot of money to do the course, so they are incentivized to do really well.
Yeah, but with private courses, there's no endpoint assessment, though, is there?
There is no endpoint assessment. You get that with VRQs, but with MVQs, there is a...
Because it's privately paid, unless you do it yourself.
Yeah, but
with... But things like that. I was really surprised with the private course when I was running one, and I was getting near the end thinking... You know, look, how about the test and all the rest of it? Because it was run by, we had an external verifier and somebody else that sort of was a partner of the academy. And then that's when they said, there's no end point, there's no test. I'm like, what do you mean there's no test? Which I thought was a bit baffling. I was like, what, you mean that everyone passes? That's what I mean. It's just, all I'm saying is there's got to be some little, like, not like a barrier, just a slight hurdle that they need to jump. But it's like, off you go. Once you start your journey, don't worry, you're going to pass at the end of it. And it's for everybody. And and that's where you end up with oversaturated high streets. You know, there's not enough footfall to even train a junior barber because there's no one walking through your door because you've got 20 or 30 on your shop, on your high street.
Can I interrupt? Go for it. Standards of the haircutting have never been higher.
But yeah.
What are we discussing here? Because... Fading. Everyone knows how to fade now.
Yeah.
Everyone's starting to learn with scissors now.
I agree and I disagree.
Go on.
Okay. I agree. I think the industry's never been so big. A lot of people are saying the industry's booming. I look at it as a slight false economy because a lot of the barbers I'm meeting, they can do fantastic fades. But if you can do a great fade, it doesn't make you a great barber. There's so many other faculties to being that all-round barber that are super important that I think are being missed, especially with a lot of colleges. Don't get me wrong, there's some colleges doing a fantastic job. There's some colleges that aren't doing a fantastic job because there's a lot of hairdressers teaching barbering. Massive bugbear for me, if you can't scissor over comb is one of the most simple barber techniques that's been going 38 years when I first started. And there's a lot of people teaching a million sections now. Barbering, I'm not just saying it's got to be traditional, but simple for yourself. There's a lot of apprentices now that are dropping out after 6 months because they're not enjoying it. They're not enjoying it because they're not very good at it. Their fault.
Where are these apprentices? Are we talking about in college or in the barbershops?
In the barbershops,
because if you're not cutting hair, you're not going to enjoy it.
Exactly. You've got to be in amongst them.
You need to be
totally
taught, and you need to have your own supply of models or have them supplied for you.
Definitely.
To see your progression.
We always try and maintain having apprentices. Right. So I do NHF apprenticeships and then obviously through college as well. The problem we're finding, all the local colleges seem to stop. They're not doing barbering anymore. And I'm struggling to find accredited places for doing the actual training there.
Yeah.
You know, it's a bit of a shame for the industry, really.
I mean, we've just found, obviously, you know, we've been at certain meetings where it's been spoke about, and a lot of shops, it's affordability at the minute. With the fact that minimum wage and national insurance has gone up sky high, and it's like, as a shop, like, can I afford to do that for that time period?
Exactly that. We're
out of my pocket.
We're in our first period without an apprentice.
Yeah.
You know, I've got a junior coming through the ranks.
Yeah.
But I'm not taking an apprentice on now. We've never had that.
Yeah.
Is it £10 an hour?
We're the same.
You know, it's just shy of £400 a week, isn't it?
Yeah. And especially the older, anyone older coming into it, it's £12.21.
Exactly. Yeah.
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 And that's a lot of money.
Yeah. Yeah. It is expensive when you're getting very little back.
Yeah,
we did a great episode with the educators from Belfast Metropolitan College. Have a look at that. I was blown away. It was incredible. And they have a system where you do it in college for 9 months a year, but you do it 3 days a week.
Right. Okay.
Okay.
And then they encourage you to work in a barber's the rest of the time.
Yeah.
Or if you're older, you can go and work in a bar, restaurant, pub, and so you can kind of subsidise your salary a little bit while you're learning your barber in there 3 days. We don't seem to be making it easy. I do think there's a lot of people pointing at barbershops because everyone's self-employed, that you can't employ apprentices, and blaming the storekeepers, if you like, for not bringing them in. But I don't think the colleges are not playing ball in the modern era. They're playing. I don't know what era they were, but it was 40. Yeah. It was a bloody long time ago.
But you know, it's not the case of the shop owners and stuff like that, because obviously we've done it for years, time and time and time again. You know, I can literally name loads of shops in my area from people that have come through our shop. Sure. You know, and they now have their own
exactly
businesses.
The same thing. Yeah.
And they're all doing really well, which is good for me. I'm proud of what they've achieved, you know, and they've helped me go along the way as we've gone. But so we've always done it. So it's definitely not to do with us. It's now just a question of affordability. And the fact that we don't get any help with it.
Yeah.
You know?
And you're not getting that support from college. You do have to do all the training yourself.
Yeah.
If you're training, you're moving yourself away from your chair.
Yeah.
So really it's a really sticky one that you got. I've never known so many guys and young women wanting to come into the industry ever. Never known so many. But I can't see how the industry's working it. I spoke to Adam Sloan and he was saying, you know, I've had to turn 20 odd apprentices down because I can't get them a placement.
Right. Yeah.
You know, but his area in college is doing really well.
Yeah.
But you come to other areas, you know, certainly where I am in London, the college is awful.
Yeah.
You know, I couldn't dream of doing it. You know, we've got our apprentice part-time with us, part-time at the London School of Barbering.
Yeah.
Support.
We've done that before where we've taken, like, someone that's literally just finished their course at London School of Barbering, and then I'm like, right, okay, we'll take you on as, like, as a trainee as such and finish off.
And get them shop ready.
And finish off that process.
Yeah.
And that works because, you know, they've gone through and then we set them up with like, you know, we do new barber rates in the shop. So they charge less. And they start to build up from there, you know, and that seems to work.
Yeah, we did exactly the same thing with that as well. Yeah.
So, you know, I'm quite happy with that because they've got a basis.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can like get them going how they should be.
But it definitely seems it's not won't, it is can't, I think. We're all finding it much more difficult. And then, you know, you end up with an industry doesn't have any of these people who've been trading 2 or 3 years. You know, every ad you see is, you know, must have 2-3 years experience.
Yeah.
But they're just not out there. And if they are, they're not jumping around on the back of an advert.
No.
No, it's a very strange one. Joe, I wanted to catch you because you have, the hybrid model in the fact that you have self-employed, you have employed, and most importantly, you're training people for the future and you have apprentices.
We've got 5-6 apprentices at the moment that we train in salon and we send out to education providers as well. You know, a lot of what this whole conversation that the people behind us are talking about is about how we can, as a business, make it more profitable. So, you know, apprenticeships are massively under threat because of, you know, a lack of funding to us, but also, you know, the cost that it, you know, of running a business, especially with the shift with the budget that kicks in April now, the on costs for us as an employer is quite, you know, it's weighted against us.
Yeah, I mean, we were speaking earlier and you were saying actually when any of us have a chat with our accountants, one of the first things they say is, well, can you not cut some apprentices and save yourself some money?
Look, if you're outside the industry and you look in and you think about what we do, an apprentice is it doesn't create a revenue, argumentatively.
Yeah.
Like, it facilitates the business. And for me, how I look at is about we get the opportunity to have homegrown talent. You can grow your team, you can invest in that. But realistically, you're looking at a two to three year investment of money. You only normally get them 2, maybe 3 days a week working for you, because by the time they're at college one day, you train in-house one day, you get them 3 days a week on the shop floor, and it's a big investment.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And they're saying now, I mean, the CBI report came out that they would be almost done, that apprenticeships, certainly in the barbering industry, is almost done with the amount of self-employed in the industry and the expense of bringing one in, that it's almost gone.
I totally agree with that, and I agree with that statement. I think the problem is that unless you're a business owner that looks further down the line and understands what your growth of your business is, the investment of an apprentice doesn't seem viable.
Yeah.
And if you don't have new talent coming in, you're only leaving the door open for, you know, 12-week MVQ level 2 courses, which isn't really what is going to create a thriving industry. So I think that's a really big sticking point.
And obviously with providers, yourself like me, there is this day a week you have to send to providers. I've made myself very clear that I don't feel that the funding that comes from government, the £9,000 a year that is given to these providers, is a fair kind of placement of the money. Do you feel that should be looked at?
I think I've got no issue with the provider being paid.
Yeah.
But I think there should be a massive incentive for me to take an apprentice on.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying that I don't pay them any money, but I think the government should support me in putting people into a workplace and providing an education. And if I'm providing them a 2-year workplace with a qualification and off the back of that, you know, stuff like that, then I should be supported. It shouldn't just be the onus of the financial burden of that be on me.
No, and I ask everybody this question, so I'm not ganging up on you.
No,
but,
I appreciate that.
But I mean, I have to train once a week, and I train more if I can, but do you feel most of your training for your apprentices is done in your store, physically by you and your team, or is the majority done by the provider at college?
There was a meeting this morning with my apprentices about why we do training on a Monday and what the benefit is. And the conversation was, if I just left you to do your MVQ level 2 or 3 at college, do you feel that you'd be of a standard, that you'd be able to work for me? They all said no. And I said, that's why you're in here on a Monday and I'm paying for my team to educate you. to you for you to have the best opportunity.
So that's where I come back. So I've got no problem with a provider being paid for services rendered, but it does feel like a lot of paperwork is covered for £9,000 and none of the physical training. And this has got to add to the fact of it's a lack of incentive that will kind of create the demise of barbershop apprenticeships.
Well, I think yeah, definitely. And also as well, it's understanding you have to have growth within an industry for it to continue to exist. And if we're not bringing new people in, whatever age, but you know, especially younger people as well, they're our next generation of what we do. They're the next salon owner, they're the next barbershop owner, whatever it may be. That's really important to us, that we really focus on that.
If I was to sign up and come on my course, your barbering course at Belfast Met, you're saying that I would do, is it 3 days a week full-time in college?
You would do 3 days a week full-time, and that would include English and maths if you don't have it.
And that's to like an MBQ level two or something?
An MBQ level one. It could be a...
Level two, I suppose, would be our main starting point coming in to do their MBQ.
As long as you're looking that you're progressing in some way with English and maths, because the government expects that now. Yeah.
So they would work with you three days a week?
3 days a week. We also have a part-time night class where people that are already in the industry want to upskill. We have that as well for them. They, as I said, will do their English and maths. We have got theory work and we've got practical work. We have clientele that comes into the salon. So we have actually a running salon, a full massive
urban escape, just
salon.
Name check in there.
In the salon. And we have clients that come down and it's
and
run
so they're
as
working
a salon.
Real style, real time in a real store with real people.
Real people,
and
real
they're
everything.
Paying for it. And that money then goes into the colleges.
Yes.
Right, okay.
Although sometimes I would be quite lenient, as Fiona knows, that we wouldn't be as expensive as what the hairdressers or whatever would be. But at the end of the day, it's to make them realise what's happening. We also bring a lot of people from outside. As you can see, you said 400 in this place belongs to Belfast Met. I reckon out of the 800, you're probably talking 650.
Wow.
Most I've had that many hugs today. I'm squeezed alive. They're all Belfast Met. They've all come through Belfast Met. I'd say the majority of these students are Belfast Met. And look at them now. You're seeing the work they're doing today. You're seeing how confident they are.
I've been looking at the stage and you know, the quality is right up there. And this is, you know, I'm interviewing and meeting people constantly. I'm having meetings and conversations with barbershop owners all the way around the country.
Yeah.
And this is a recurring theme, you know, and that's why I wanted to make sure it was out there.
Yeah.
And if this is what we're doing in the UK, then great. But if my 29-year-old was looking for a college course in London, they'd be doing a one-day release. And during that one day at college that I would be paying them for, they would be ticking boxes. You know, they learn very little. You know, they'll get maybe 8 to 10 live models, live haircuts in that whole course.
Well, I can promise you that when my students come out of their year, or if they go on to do their level three, their 2 years, they are barbers. They are barbers you want to pay on the floor.
Yeah.
And they are barbers that are going to make you money because they're good.
But, they're barbers that can't wait to get the qualification, to get that piece of paper, but to get out and work in industry. Because they want to start their career and they see where the career can take them, coming back into teaching. You know, they see it as that long-term thing, not a short-term.
And so the funding, I'm only wanting to kind of answer questions in my head. So the funding for that, how do they get there? How does that three-day course?
So full-time courses, anything over 15 hours is free. They don't pay for that.
Yeah.
That doesn't matter what age you are. As long as you have the relevant 3 points to get onto the course, all FE courses are free.
And you don't have to be backed by a store. You don't have to have a job. Like with ours, they have to have 4 days a week with me and I pay for the fifth
day. Can I just say that we try to influence them to go into shops? We help them get work. I've had so many students that own their own barbers now. We try to push them in and get them in. Mm-hmm. We also push them towards, now with barbering, it's a big thing, the boats. Cruise ships, There's also filming. And, you know, we worked along with the Game of Thrones. We sent barbers down there. They were doing beards. They were doing, some of them actually got parts in. We're constantly getting them out there. Just not to say that you have to just be a barber. You can take this further. There's so many different directions.
Yeah, no, that's amazing.
Yeah.
So, and but equally for an older, a second or third career, that would allow you four days a week that you could go and work in a bar or a restaurant.
Absolutely.
So you could sustain your career while you're while you're training.
Yeah.
Yeah, you see, this is what I'm saying. I want fact checking because I don't, I've not found this in the UK on the mainland. I've spoken to so many owners who haven't found this. Now, obviously, I'm not going to labour that point, but please come back to me and I really would love to hear this and I will respond. So I'm really interested with a company that's all self-employed. And one of the reasons I hear about, oh, we don't have apprentices, is because we're self-employed, I can't bring an apprentice through. How do you cope with that?
Very simple.
Oh, right, that's what I thought. I so thought that was going to be a different answer.
Nah. Very simple. You hire the right people that care, you know? Like, we've got a guy called Elliot and Ed is in the Grange Park shop, which is in Winchmore Hill, and that they care a lot about everything that goes on because they're part of the brand, you know?
And this is a young barber never learning to cut from scratch.
Yeah, so Murdan's been with us for about 2.5 years. Ed is, was taught by us. He was an apprentice. We've taught about 6-7 apprentices.
Okay.
So they just, I think because you teach, even Elliot came in as a hairdresser, never had a background in barbering. We've taught him, so he appreciates that kind of.
And as an apprentice, are they working? I mean, presumably the apprentices are self-employed, they're needing to cut at a reduced rate a deal and that kind of stuff. But are you then, are they getting their training from across the team that everyone's around? It's like, oh, look, let me help you out here and that kind of stuff.
Everyone.
So it's quite loose, but
if they want like intense one-to-one training, it's also available.
Yeah.
As long as they ask for it, you know, or they come and we'll put on a day for the staff, or if they maybe want to do a specific thing, then they can come to me or Dino or Elliot and ask for it.
With the apprenticeship program, it's going to disappear. Yeah. So
I think we need to come up with something that's not the fast track, that's 6 weeks, because I think that's not enough time.
Yep.
And then not the whole year, because people can't afford to employ someone for a year if they're just training. We need to try and find something in the middle.
Well, I guess the fact I'm quite lucky in the fact that I employ, lucky, well, historically I've always employed and we've stuck with that model. And we've just taken on Alex, who is 30 and wanting to come into it. Had lots and lots of jobs. His phrase, I've had lots of jobs, now I want a career. And so we had to really sit down and think about how we're going to do this. He doesn't have the time, you know, at 30, we can't spend 2 years with him on minimum wage training him. We're a small company. We're only little, you know, a handful of barbers. So we don't have a lot of time to allocate whole days.
Yeah.
So we've gone with a hybrid, and the fact that I've paid for him to do some longer courses. He's doing a 9-week course, London School of Barbering.
Oh, okay. Perfect. Yeah.
And that will be supporting hand in hand with our team in the shop, working with him on clients with live people to fast track.
I think we can probably get him to a good way.
In
you know, funny enough, I actually trained the owner of London School.
Oh, Michael.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
I actually trained him.
I think it's that time that I think to allocate to wholly to it.
Yeah.
Because generally apprentices were 2 years. You did a fair amount of training, but you also did a lot of just working in the store.
Yeah, I mean, you will always have, you know, at the end of the day, right now, okay, it's basically, you know, barbers need to do what they need to, you know, get started to survive. And the barbershop owners, that's the thing. But, you know, and so anything goes right now.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, so we have college, you know, courses. We all have fast track. You know, 4 weeks, 6 week, 9 week, whatever. At the end of the day, everyone's different, you know? And so nowadays, barbershops are so desperate to get staff in. So that's the thing. So.
But that's exactly why we've kind of gone with this idea of, you know, he's a great lad, really good attitude, good mindset, but doesn't have the thousands of pounds to pay to do it.
Mm. And I'm kind of like, well, listen, if we can organise this over the next year, we can turn him into a really good barber within the year. He'll be happy. I'll be happy.
But you know what? You did the right thing because you saw it as an investment.
Yeah.
And that's what barbershop owners have to see.
But that's what's lost at the moment. There's no way of investing.
I did that last year with one of my, 2 years ago with Matty that now works for me. And I loved it. But the problem that I found is I've had to make, all my staff went self-employed at the beginning of this year. Right. And it was kind of taken out of my hand a little bit because we've been employing people for 9 years now. And I kept on losing staff because in Edinburgh, everyone is self-employed.
Yeah.
And they chat to their mates, oh, I'm making this, I'm making that. And to try and keep up with it, you end up taking money from yourself.
Yeah.
Because you want to pay them well. I mean, I've always wanted to pay everyone well and do all that. So one went self-employed, then they all went self-employed. So for me, everyone's gone self-employed now. And it is easier for me. It is, 100%.
But
like,
it's really difficult for you to employ an apprentice.
Yeah.
But then employ an apprentice, he won't be able to do that.
But when I did it when everyone's employed, it was brilliant. And now that's my worry now.
Welcome to the Noble Barber Podcast. We're always looking for interesting people and interesting stories. If you know someone or you are someone with a great story that you want to share, get in touch and come join me on the sofa. Thanks very much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed the episode and we'll see you next time.